You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to Atheistically Speaking with your host, Thomas Smith. This, I'm told, is episode 107 by my crack research team of me who looked at my iTunes. today, I'm joined by Steve. How you doing, Steve?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you. I'm sorry you're not so well, though.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm a little sniffly. I don't know why. And as you pointed out, I guess I would point that out on the show. Well, it's when you got to talk for, you know, sometimes 45 minutes to an hour, it gets distracting, at least to me, when I'm constantly sniffling. So it's hard not to address it. But yeah, I don't know what happened. I woke up and I'm sneezing all over the place. So we'll see. Well,
as a psychologist, I'm interested in your style because do you know what reflexivity means from our point of view?
Reflexivity. Explain it. I'm not sure where you're going.
Right. If you're unkind, you'd call it being self-absorbed. But if you were intellectual and sensible about it, you would say it's right to question yourself all the time and to wonder why you're saying things and where it comes from. So your reflexivity, I like a lot because it's how we should be thinking all the time, questioning ourselves, questioning why we said something, where it comes from.
Oh, wow. Well, I will definitely go with that. I think that's, but I worry. Okay, this is just actually going to be psychology hour. This is
okay. Fine by me.
I sometimes worry that the reason I question so much is due to other qualities that I'm not sure are positive. You know, when I think in terms of like, oh, how would I want my kids to be? Like, because some of the nicest qualities people can have are, it seems like a result of lack of confidence. Like, you know, is there a connection there? What do you think?
Yeah, yes, it could be, but I think that lack of confidence is a good thing. Lack of confidence can be bad, and it stops you doing things. It clearly, I know you're not much of an outgoer. You don't sound like the party animal from what you've said. But I hear you doing stuff which I regard as the good side of self-confidence, the questioning, the self-doubt, the reflexivity, as I say. It's something that's lacking in, well, I think we can go on to Right Wing Watch and we could look at a whole host of people who we think lack reflexivity, but they are self-absorbed. So so there's a good side and a bad
fairness,
side.
All fairness, I think almost every politician has to be completely sure of themselves. I don't think it's just the right wing. I think that, I'll go with you if you want to say that there's probably statistically a little bit less reflexivity, as you say, in the right wing. But I think that politicians have to be confident and appear confident because when you're trying to win votes, you just can't show any doubt. It's kind of unfortunate. And I agree with you. Like, I wish there was more of that side of people, especially in politics. I wish politicians were able to be like, well, not quite sure about this. we'll think on it.
In your case, if people are listening to this program, that probably means that they like it and they like the style. And it's not a self-absorbed reflexivity. You laugh at yourself more than anybody else, which I think is great. You either don't like it and don't tune in, or you like it and you listen, or you like it a lot and you become a Patreon. And I hope later on at the end of the program, you will mention the Patreons.
Ah, thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it. Well, I think that, I definitely don't have the most popular atheist podcast or anything, but like you say, there's definitely a niche or a niche, as some people will say in America. I don't know.
Niche over here. Shall we use the phrase fellow weirdos?
Well, I don't know. I mean, is that going too far? I don't know. We'll see. I guess if I'm not insulted, then that's fine. Well, yeah. So, Steve, I do want to mention that, you know, people probably recognize that you've been a guest before.
Yes.
And people can go check that out. Apologies, but I have to ask. I mean, in general, how are you doing? Any better? Any worse? The same?
Things, you know more about this than I can possibly say now. So it's a bit of an unfortunate situation, but I can't speak about some things for legal reasons.
Yeah, and we can emphasize there's things you can't speak of for very good legal reason. Or, I mean, you know, it's not just Steve wanting to avoid talking about anything. He definitely
No, I'd love to tell you everything. Right, I really would. But, you know, 2 years inside is too long. It's 2 years too long. So I've got to be a bit careful. But to answer your question, obviously things are changing and things look like they're changing for the better. And there's certainly things I can hang on to at the moment. And that's great.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, awesome. I'm glad to hear that. And I hope they continue to change for the better. And it's interesting. People may know the story that made the rounds if they haven't heard you talk about it on another podcast without possibly knowing that it was you. So there was a news story that came about that I saw totally, you know, unrelated to, I mean, you sent me it, I think, but I had already seen it at that point, related to a court ruling that made the rounds. So,
in fact, I mentioned it the last time we talked
with Jake. Yeah, I do remember something about it.
And I said I can talk to you about that at length another time. Do you remember? And,
okay, and that was that time. You're always so cryptic. You're always one step ahead of us.
It's the law, you know. The law is weird here. When I spoke to you, I was awaiting a high court appeal judgment. And that judgment was about this story, which we still haven't explained to anybody.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
We will shortly. And so because I was awaiting that, I could mention it, but I didn't really want to go into any detail because it was, you know, one of those things. It's apart from anything else, it's a bit rude anyway to be a bit premature. But as you're about to explain, we are no longer in the court system on the issue we're going to discuss. We're now in the court of public opinion. I'm here.
Why don't you try to take us through it then? Because I don't know that people will remember, you know, what you were talking about. So let's go. Maybe can you go to the beginning? I don't know. How did this?
In the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Your legal apologies for bumbling around a little bit, but your legal situation is a little confusing to an outsider. You're always
it's confusing to me. It's confusing to the legal system. They don't know what they're doing either.
So you're always in one or two cases at a time. You know, pending judgments.
More than that. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. But I'll give you the basic bones and we can work from there.
Absolutely.
So a separation from my wife occurred in 2009. In 2011, a settlement, if you like, was decided by a judge, a senior judge. And he dictated that I would have to go to Catholic Mass at Christmas and take my children there as well.
This happened in 2011 that he did that?
Yes, 2011.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's been a while.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Long, long while.
You're really serious about not talking about the – because the story only came out the other day. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
It's been bumbling around in certain quarters, but well, I'll explain as we go on.
Okay.
So the judge – my former wife didn't ask for this. And, of course, the children hadn't been going to Christian masses before the separation. So it was a brand new thing. She didn't ask for it, and he just – he told us some anecdotes about his Catholic experience and then refused to let me have the children at weekends, which I can only put down to his bias that I see, because he then said, well, he couldn't do anything about Christmas. He didn't say it because he could, of course, not do anything about Christmas, not falling on weekends. So he said that if I had the boys at Christmas, I had to take them to Mass. And, you know, I think a lot of people over here thought that was excluded by the European Convention on Human Rights, which kind of echoes your constitution. So I've been fighting that ever since. And as I say, we had this decision at the end of last year, after I last spoke to you. And that decision decided that the judgment was too small an infringement on my ECHR rights to amount to a breach of those rights.
Oh, wow.
Which seems bizarre. Yeah. So we finally have, if you like, a definitive judgment. I'm no longer fighting this in the courts, so I may go back there if someone finds an avenue. But at the moment, we're in the court of public opinion, and we're trying to get this changed. Of course, Thomas, this isn't just me and my sons. This is precedent. It's in a higher court.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So it even if they find a solution for me and my boys, that's completely irrelevant. We can't have a system where, I believe, where a judge can dictate religious what religious occasions you do or do not attend, affiliations or any way it's manifested. So we believe we have to fight this. And obviously I've been on the Skeptical podcast for well over a year now. And I came into that because of this case.
Huh.
And which I can explain to you if you want. But
Sure. I didn't know that. I thought you were just contributing.
Yes. Let me tell you how that happened. When I didn't know that the court case at the end of last year was going to happen, it was the 50th episode anniversary of Skeptical. And they said, to celebrate 50 episodes, does anybody want to send something in, send a piece in for the program? And I sent a piece in on my freedom of thought, my children's freedom of thought, and the European Convention on Human Rights. And they liked it. And they said, do you want to send something in every week? And I do. Oh, well, every episode.
Oh,
and
I see.
Do. But, but it's not, obviously, the vast majority of what I send in has got nothing to do with my, with me, even.
It's complaining about right-wing politicians.
Possibly has been known, but whatever's got me going that week about bad science reporting, science and skepticism and atheism are my lines, and of course psychology.
Right. So I just was thinking I need you to any psychology news. You, save that for my podcast, and we'll publish that on mine. I'll try to steal you.
You can have me on to talk psychology anytime you like. If you want to talk about the psychology of idiots that claim that Birmingham's a no-go area, I'll come and talk to you about idiots who think Birmingham's a no-go area. Whatever, you know, I'll talk to you about whatever. You know what I'm like. I'll just jabber on.
Okay, so yeah, definitely. But it's a pleasant quality. I like it.
Thank you.
Okay, so where were we? So you've got the ruling and you appealed saying it's violating your ESL, what was it?
Would it be a good idea if I read it to you? It's very short.
Sure.
Okay. Let me just get that in front of me, which means moving my cup of tea, which is very inconvenient.
I got my cup of coffee here, so it's like American British stereotypes.
Divided by a type of drink, yeah. Okay. So this is Article 9 of the European Convention on Human Rights, which basically echoes your constitution, which has been absorbed into British law, and it's entitled Article 9, Freedom of Thought, Conscience and Religion. And it's got 2 points. Point one, everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief and freedom, either alone or in community with others and in public or private, to manifest his religion or belief in worship, teaching, practice and observance. Point two, freedom to manifest one's religion or belief shall be subject only to such limitations as are prescribed by law and are necessary in a democratic society in the interest of public safety, for the protection of public order, health or morals, or for the protection of the rights and freedom of others. And I think we could both probably heartily agree with that sentiment, couldn't we?
Right, yeah. So that's essentially to keep it from saying, my religion says I need to do a bunch of drugs and kill a bunch of people. It's like, well...
Yep,
not quite.
Precisely. Or perhaps I don't want to give my child blood transfusions.
Well, is that such a well-defined line? I don't know. Honestly, for me, I'm saying it's fine. Yeah, I agree with that. But is that how the law is interpreted currently? I don't know.
I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah.
What we do know now is that presumably in the interest of public safety, or for the protection of public order, health or morals, or for the protection of the rights and freedoms of others, Steve can be sent to Catholic Mass.
Yeah.
Now, you'll have to... Now, blood transfusions... I don't know what the fact... I didn't actually track down the facts of blood transfusions and Jehovah's Witnesses. But I think it seems strange to me to find going to Catholic Mass an issue of public safety or protection of public order... or health or morals, I guess.
Well, I thought you said, sorry to
go for it,
contradict you, but I thought you said they agreed it was a breach, but it was too small to do anything about.
No, they didn't agree it was a breach. It was an infringement that was too small to be a breach.
This is really technical legal terms here. So it was... All I'm saying is I don't think...
A limitation that did not amount to breach of Article 9.
Wow. That's really
curious. It does seem odd, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, of course, the way I see this is knee-jerk defensivism. I think that the judge made a stupid mistake.
Oh, okay.
And I think that from then on, the judiciary, rather than addressing that mistake, has knee-jerk defended and dug itself deeper and deeper and put itself in a position where it started to say something that he doesn't really want to say and doesn't know how to stop saying. That's my belief. That's how I feel about it. I don't think there's anyone out there who wants this.
Yeah, I don't understand it. How is this? Are there any other cases of this judge, you know, like going sort of beyond his rights in his sentencing? Because how sure. sustainable is this? I mean, if he's just telling a bunch of people to go, why you? I have so many questions. Why do you have any idea why he decided to do this in your case? And if he does it all the time, why hasn't it been dealt with before? If he doesn't do it all the time, why did he just decide to do it for you?
Oh, that's a lot of questions in one go.
You can answer any of those, I'd be I'd be happy.
The internet will tell you this judge has a track record of dodgy decisions.
Hmm.
But as far as I know, I'm the only person in this country who has been directed in this way by any judge, let alone this one. Why me? Well, it was late on a Friday afternoon is probably my best answer to that. I think I think he screwed up.
Well, the thing that's interesting, and I'm reading this article here, have you approached it not even as an atheist? Have you approached it as just that's not my faith? Or have
I don't approach it as an atheist because my atheism is irrelevant.
Well, no, I know it is, but I'm curious if that was because you say here in this article that you're not Catholic, but it doesn't seem like, okay, the last time I went to church was some time ago and it was Unitarian Church that I attended. So,
yes.
Okay, so but you didn't say I'm an atheist. This is, you know, this is sort of offensive to me as an atheist. You sort of in the court of public opinion here, you're simply saying this is not my faith and I don't really go to church. I'm just wondering if there's a conscious decision behind that.
Not really, because I don't think it's not just tactical. I really don't think it's relevant. The relevance is I'm not a Catholic. Actually, thinking about it, it doesn't even matter if I was a Catholic, does it?
No, it doesn't.
If I was a Catholic,
it doesn't at all.
If we were all Catholic and we all went to church all the time, it would still be, in my view, wrong to die for church for a state institution.
I absolutely agree with you. I just think in the sense that people's perceptions matter, especially when you said yourself. I mean, you're now playing it out in the court of public opinion. I do believe it would make a large difference in perception if you said, well, I'm Catholic and this guy ordered me to go to Catholic church. People would probably just not even – though they should, because any judge ordering someone to go to church I think is wrong.
Yes.
I think in public opinion would probably be like, big deal. Yes. Like what are you – so I just from that angle.
Yeah, I think you're right. However, I do think it's important to be – that I'm not only honest but upfront. I don't think it'll do me any favors if someone could turn around later on and say, oh, hang on a minute, you didn't say so and so. So I think it's important that that I'm clear about things.
Sure.
I also, on principle, don't think that an atheist is less than anybody else, because this law, this precedent is effectively a law now. So if one was able to be reflexive and think about things, like clearly you can, and I hope I can, one would see that there is no difference between this and sending a Jew to a mosque.
Yeah.
There cannot be any difference unless you're going to be, breaching the convention just by differentiating between me and a Muslim or a Jewish man or a Catholic. So, they have cornered themselves in a silly position where they can't get me out of it without, well, I don't know how they can do that. But they can't. I don't see how they can hang on to this mistake, because it does leave the door open for some very strange. It's not a slippery slope fallacy.
It's blowing my mind. I can't even process it. Like, there's just, it's so unbelievably stupid and obviously wrong. I don't know how they're sticking to their guns.
To answer your question, though, your question was why me?
Yeah,
and I think probably the answer is because crazy things seem to be drawn to me. I have some kind of magnetic attraction to them.
Yeah, well, that's probably it.
This is the only explanation I've got, really, because as you know, well, you probably only know part of it, but I have had some rather weird things happen to me.
Yeah.
But it is. I do find it strange. I mean, as I was a lorry driver, a truck driver, you'd say, in America. I went to university as a mature student. And a lot of mature students suffer from... I can't think of the phrase now. when you lack belief in yourself and see yourself as scamming your system, you know, that you're not really deserving to be there.
Oh, that's how I always feel. That sounds like
yes,
we're back
you would,
to the
you would, Thomas, wouldn't you? Yeah. Because you're reflexive like that. Of course you think that. Something syndrome, and I can't think what the bloody word is.
Yeah, is that where just – I have that too. I think a lot of I've heard a lot of people have it where it's like I'm pretty much counting down the days till someone just realizes I'm a total fraud. And I think that's what
exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I spent my first
year I might have to edit that out. Otherwise, everyone's going to know I'm a total fraud.
They know, Thomas.
Okay, they already know. They're just humoring me.
Being nice.
we know you're a fraud. We like you anyway. Well, that'd be nice. That would actually be. I'd be at peace then.
Absolutely. Imposter syndrome, it's called.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of mature students suffer imposter syndrome. A lot of academics generally do. You know, and so I sometimes turn to myself and almost think this isn't true. This isn't really happening to me. I'm making it up or something, and I have to kind of look. Actually, no, this, you know, the facts. Yeah. I can't hide the facts. This really is happening, you know. So the imposter syndrome kicks in every now and again, and I think when you say why you, I kind of stop and say, yeah, maybe it isn't happening to me then, but yeah, it is.
Well, the only thing I meant by that, this doesn't take away from anything you were saying, but the only thing I meant by that is. Why the judge happened to pick you? Like, was there something about your case that made him decide I need to tell this person to go to? You know, I it's just so odd. I'm trying to think of reasons. I'm grasping at straws.
I'm trying to think why he felt in a case all about gender roles, deciding who would care for the children, the judge thought it was appropriate to make a sexist joke. I don't know why it could be appropriate for him to bring up his own religion.
Oh, the sexist joke was that. Did I read that? Or did you?
No, I'm just telling you, you probably haven't heard that before.
Oh, tell me it.
It was just something stupid about whether women could park cars or not. I can't even remember the details.
During the sentencing? During the sentencing?
Sentencing. You know. No, your sentencing is the right phrase in my case.
Oh, is it? Okay.
No, only in my case.
Sentencing you to Catherine.
Yeah. No, during the course of the case, he made some stupid remark about that. I regard as stupid. In relation to whether women could park cars or not, and it was puerile. Oh, I was trying to talk about gender roles, and you know, obviously, I saw that I was the best person to be the main parent for the children.
Oh, I
see.
He
obviously saw otherwise.
Based on what? Why does he see otherwise? But well, whatever. This guy, we've seen that this guy's decision making is suspect. It's difficult to pin down exactly where he's coming up
with
this stuff.
Yeah, unless you're going to ask me to read his mind, and no matter how good a psychologist I am,
I'll ask you
to
try.
I can't. I really don't understand where he's coming from.
So, well, as he's far as 70, and as it's mentioned in this article that you sent me, you know, called to the bar in 1968. Well, it's possible, you know, his legal knowledge is a little dated. Maybe his whole mindset is probably pretty dated.
Of course, he may have done this 50 times, 100 times, and we just don't know about it.
Yeah, it's possible.
And because obviously I'm very restricted to in regard to what I can say, which is why I'm anonymous. And I cannot identify myself, because if I did that, again, I'd be in breach of contempt of court laws.
Wait, for this one? For this ruling that already happened? I thought you had said...
Yes. Even on this tight
so
topic we're talking about.
So if someone... And again, this is a little difficult because our legal systems are so different. And even if they weren't, I probably wouldn't know enough about the legal system anyway.
In this case, I'm going to say that it's okay. In this case, I think it's all right to say that I can't talk about this. And the reason is because it's to do with the lives of children. And you cannot identify children, which is good, which means that their friends at school will not point them out and say, oh, I heard about you on the telly or whatever. So I think that not that this case would go on TV, but in general, this is why we cannot identify ourselves in any matter that affects children, because by identifying myself, I'll be identifying my children.
Okay.
And by doing that, we'd be in contempt of court. And I think probably rightly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds reasonable.
In other matters, yes, it is strange that I have to be anonymous, but for this one discrete thing, I think that's an okay rule to have. But you have to have limitations, and I think this is a reasonable limitation of freedom of speech.
Okay. Yeah, no, I wasn't necessarily making any value judgment on it. I was just saying I don't, you know, I can't. It's hard to follow sometimes. I don't know all the ins and outs of your legal system.
Well, yeah, I was talking to Sam Mulvey. I don't know if you know him. Yesterday,
and not
I was
offhand.
Ask an Atheist.
Oh, okay, and, I know the show. Yeah,
and I tried to describe the British legal system, and I described it as a drunk lurching from lamppost to lamppost, and that's really. See, I don't see this isn't a right wing conspiracy. It isn't a Christian conspiracy. There's no Christian lobby that wants this. There's no judge conspiracy that wants this. You know, this is cock up.
See, that's a good point decision. Because as an American, and I'm sure maybe other Americans listening might have felt the same way, I had already put it into the framework of like, oh, that Christian right, you know. But when you say that, it makes sense. I don't think, you know, maybe here in this country, I think people would see it that way if this happened. They'd probably see it as, oh, those Republicans, you know, they're trying to enforce their religion on everyone. But over there, it sounds like that's not what it is. It's just some
we
nut.
Don't have you haven't got Brian Fisher anymore either, I hear, but we don't have Brian Fishers of the world, or if we do, we don't hear of them, we don't see anything of them. They're an insignificant bunch, and in fact, if you mention your religion in politics, it's pretty much a point against you. It's rude.
Well, I had my mind blown when I talked to Stefan. Did you hear that episode? He described politics in France and how
yes,
that was a breath of fresh air in some ways. It's really odd to hear that if you talk about your religion at all, you pretty much have to resign.
Yeah, pretty well. So resign. Tony Blair basically had it almost pushed out of him that he was a Christian. And it was embarrassment, and his PR man had to come up and say, we don't do religion. When he met Bush, he had a great question asked of him when he met President Bush. And the question asked was, did you pray together? And the answer was, of course we didn't pray together. But it was an aggressive question. You know what I mean? It was a question that it was a cruising for bruising. You know, mm-hmm. if he had said yes, that would have been pretty much the end of him.
Funny. And it would have been, I'm sure, points for Bush over here.
Possibly, yes. Yeah. But it's a source of embarrassment. Odd. You don't mention your politics. You don't mention your religion.
Oh, I wish you didn't mention your politics as a politician.
Well, quite.
What can you talk about exactly?
No, they can't talk about they can't openly talk about the religion without being ridiculed. There are a couple who are known to be religious, and it's a source of ridicule for them.
I dream of this day in America. I don't know. It's never going to happen, but it sounds so good.
Well, people have asked, don't we have a Freedom From Religion Foundation over here to help me? And we do have some groups over here, but they're nowhere near as powerful or as influential as yours. They can't do the stuff yours do because we haven't had the reason to.
Yeah.
You know, it's true.
Well, there you go. The weird stuff always happens to Steve. He's become a reason to have Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yeah, why not? I've been thinking about this the last few days. Is why not? You know, now we do need something because we've now had a transgression, which I think is at principle, at the base, at the root of state and religion. You know, if you send someone to one church service every 20 years, it's the wrong side of the line.
Yeah.
And we have to stamp on it now. We have to stamp it out.
Absolutely. So I'm not sure where if we've covered the entire backstory of it and everything, because I was going to ask.
You can't cover the backstory. Well, you'd be here all day. Yeah. All year, in fact. there are some wrinkles. Yeah, certainly, if you want to iron them out.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. I was going to ask you about the sort of the response and stuff, but we can push that off. Let me know where you want to go.
Sure. Well, I just find this particularly fascinating because obviously to appeal, you need reasons. Mm-hmm. So I had a court order directing me to go to mass, but I had no reason for it. No judgment, we'd call it over here, a determination, something written which you can appeal. And so I wanted to appeal the judgment and I couldn't. This is actually funny. I needed the judgment so that I could appeal, because you can't appeal against a vacuum, can you?
Uh-huh.
Right? So I wanted to argue an appeal, and the appeal, the judge wouldn't write me a judgment. And I kept on asking the court.
Sorry,
when the
is
judgment
this be- so this is before?
This is case one, the when the judge
is this way back?
Did this. This is 2011 when the judge first did this.
Gotcha.
And it went into 2012, and I kept on writing to the court and phoning the court, and they wouldn't give me judgment. And I spoke to the Court of Appeal, and they said not having a judgment is a really good basis for an appeal. You can appeal because you haven't got a judgment. That's a really good ground for appeal. And as soon as you get a judgment, you're entitled to launch an appeal on that basis. Right. Now, let that tick around a little bit. When you get a judgment, you can appeal the fact that you haven't got a judgment. Bizarre.
Sounds like a great system, yeah.
Well, I had to sue the judge in the High Court to get him to write a judgment.
What? Okay, what was going on there? Why wasn't he writing a judgment? And this is the judgment whether, you know, who's going to get the kids and...
Well, everything, everything. He never did get around to saying why he ruled on the religion thing. When the judgment came, he said he lost the evidence and something like...
This person needs to be fired. I don't know what is going on here. This is a joke. What is it like for judges over there? I mean, are they just appointed and then... Or they win election or they...
They get appointed, yes.
They get appointed and then they're just... until they become completely senile.
Which, of course, you can. I'm not going to say which side of the senile line this judge fell. Let's just say that when the judgment came, it had an apology in it saying he'd lost the evidence and stuff. And I don't think he ever found it because I'll without going into detail, let's say person A said this. In reality, in court, person A said X, said this, and person B said, that's not right.
Okay.
When he wrote his judgment, he said, person A said this. And person B backed them up.
Oh.
That's how crazy and reversible, how much he reversed the case. So if he ever found the evidence, I don't know. But there's no evidence to me that he found the evidence because...
He lost that evidence too.
Well, because of the bizarre nature of it. It has been an incredible experience.
It is really weird. I laughed at your theory, but now I'm with you. I think there's something just weird about you that's attracting...
Exactly. I mean, it's not just
cosmic.
I've never heard of any other case where someone's had to prosecute the judge in the High Court to make him write a judgment. And the way that happened is, and also what happened, you can't just prosecute a judge. You have to prosecute the institution as well.
Oh,
I guess it's a bit like having a company, I guess. You know,
they're a little protected or something. They're sort of insulated.
If you like.
Yeah.
Because if I've got a big company, you don't sue me, you sue the company.
Depending on the structure of the company, yeah.
Exactly.
That's why no one can sue this show. I have no...
Yeah.
Don't hold me accountable. No, that's actually not true. Unfortunately, I'm a sole proprietorship. I'm screwed.
Well, you set up a company.
Yeah,
to protect
I will.
After this episode. You may have to. So I wanted to sue the judge, and it turned out I couldn't. I had to sue the judge by name and the court and the Ministry of Justice. So I phoned up the Ministry of Justice to find out exactly who I should be suing. I said, do I name you as a defendant? They said, yes, you have to prosecute us as well. Okay. And they said, oh, while you're there, Dr. X, would you mind ever so much... initiating a complaint against this judge at the Office of Judicial Complaints. And I did, on the basis of the sexist joke, the religious bias, and the fact that he hadn't written a judgment. And in the end, they upheld the complaint against the judge that he hadn't written a judgment, but they couldn't investigate the sexist joke or the religious bias. They said that had to be an appeal process. So you end up, you know what I mean? You bounce around these different groups and bodies and things. You kind of think, I don't know what I'm doing. And then you realize they don't either.
Yeah. No one knows what they're doing.
Exactly.
No one has any idea.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. I mean, it's not so much that, that we have, that you and I have imposter syndrome. No one knows what they're doing. We're just like everybody else.
Yeah, but they don't have the imposter syndrome, which they should.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man. This is a mess. This is a mess, Steve.
Sorry, mate. Shall we start again and make it easier?
Yeah, I'm going
to Hi, Thomas. Good to be here. Everything's really straightforward.
Yeah, my cold has cleared up, actually. Might have just been some morning thing, so I'm better. Let's start over. And then we're also going to need some detailed diagram or something with... It's like Game of Thrones, keeping track of all the characters and what's going on. Although it's just one character. It's just the judge and his insanity, I think. So
I would say that in all the people in this process, I probably know what happened to me best. But the idea that I know it properly is an exaggeration.
Right.
It's got so complicated. So I kind of know how I come out of that pile of spaghetti, but it's
like so I was going to ask, did they maybe don't know this, but did they want you to issue the complaint just so they could distance themselves from the judge? Like it wouldn't be an indictment on the whole system if it's just this, you know, judge being terrible? Well,
you probably know by now my answer to that question, which will be, I can't tell you what their thinking was.
Well, it was a guess. I don't know.
I suspect that they were slightly irritated by the situation, that they shouldn't have been put in that situation. Hmm. I suspect that was the case. They may have wanted to escalate a process by which this judge retired. I don't. I mean, like I say, these are just ideas. Right. You know, I don't know the answer to this. But you know, all I can tell you is what they said to me, which was, "Would you ever mind ever so much doing this?" And I said, "And I didn't need asking twice."
Oh man. Well. It seems as though you've had pretty good response to this. I wanted to ask you about that because I had seen this first before you even sent it to me when Ricky Gervais like posted it on his Facebook or something. And I was thinking, yeah. Oh, that's an interesting story. His name's Ricky. Steve. Huh. Interesting. I was wondering, but I, you know, I was like,
it can't be him. Yeah. That kind of all these things happen to the same person. It must be somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Ricky Gervais and Richard Dawkins both boosted the issue into the public awareness, for which I'm grateful to both of them. And I've done a few interviews, as you know. And it's been interesting. They're all different, and I love that. But I've inundated with tweets, various communications, various routes by which people have been able to give me support. Videos have been made, and people are putting their support on the comments. It's been, as you know, I live in a kind of very isolated farm in the middle of nowhere. Surrounded by snow at the moment, snowed in half of winter. And I'm on my own much of the time, me and the cat and the pig. and, you know, it's weird that I've been on my own for so long and suddenly it's like a pair of atheist arms around me. It's really quite touching because you've become quite independent, if you like, and quite hard around the edge and laugh at it quite a lot. You know, something which has been, you know, pretty hard and hurtful, I just laugh at now because you have to in the end, don't you? And it's been quite an emotional experience the last couple of weeks because it's kind of touched me, you know, how much support I've had from other people. It's very important, you know, and I wouldn't have said that 3 weeks ago. I thought I was a rock, you know, doing this on my own.
Yeah.
But I realize now what a boost I've had from the community, from the atheist and skeptic community.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm really glad for that.
I've had virtually zero negative comment.
Yeah, well, it's such an obvious issue. like you said, no one wants this.
This is almost a non-interview, Thomas, because we need an opposition for this to argue against. And there ain't one, really.
Some crazy religious person just to – I don't know if we could harness – anyone who would be on the other side of this issue, I don't know if we could really get them to speak a coherent word, but yeah.
But then all – that's true. But the other thing is that then you just say to them, yeah, but I can't come to your church because I've got to be somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they end up being on my side as well, really. So it isn't an atheist issue. This is an everybody issue. So what other weird situation that I've almost got no enemy here, apart from stubbornness, stupidity, intransigence, and just this reflexive knee-jerk defensivism.
Wow.
Which is why the public campaign is so important. Yeah. Because nothing will happen unless people make it happen.
Yeah. So, weird question. How did these people track you down for these interviews? I mean, had you already gone on everyone else's podcast the first time like mine and had a...
No. You were the only one that I discussed that issue with.
Right.
Because it came up in the flow of our conversation. Because you, of course, as you know, are the inner voice in my head now.
which is very troublesome, but we'll leave that.
I am getting help.
But you need to see a psychologist.
If only I could find one.
Yeah.
We'd been in the conversation we had for a few weeks, and I wrote to you and said, hey, you know, I'm in this situation. Shall we talk about it? And so we did.
Yeah.
But the current situation about the freedom of thought issue, well, as I say, I've been on Skepticule and it's been bubbling along, and they've been very kind and give me a solid base. We knew the decision was coming up. And the decision came, and then we were all very quiet about it on Facebook and everything, because we thought, you know, there's some blogs need to be written, and we're going to launch them all at the same time. And one of the skeptical crowd you had to contact a couple of journalists, and so it kind of it hit very suddenly and very hard when the main Telegraph article was printed. And I say Ricky Gervais and Richard Dawkins tweeted about it within a day or so of it. So it hit very hard, and probably more suddenly than I expected. I thought it might be an issue that slowly rose, but it really came quite hard and fast.
Yeah, you never know with social media. It just could just be everything goes nuts and viral, and dies away. They say. Or just no one notices it. It's very, very strange.
We have to remember that we're still a very small corner of the internet. Most people out there in the world haven't got a clue about this issue.
I don't know. I mean, Ricky Gervais is pretty big now. I mean, he's got quite an audience, and Richard Dawkins does as well. But yeah, I mean, sure, most people probably didn't even care about the issue because they don't, you know, they're not.
And most people don't. I mean, most people who would care probably don't realize that this is, how important this is.
Yeah.
You know, that this is precedent, that this now has effectively changed the UK, at least, possibly Europe, but I know at least the UK, in that if this came up tomorrow, say, let's just say a Jew had been sent to a mosque, maybe the judge just got the word wrong, and rather than said to the Jew, you must go to the synagogue, wrote mosque.
Yeah, which and, still would have been wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, all of it would be wrong. Let's just say that happened. Well, and someone appealed that. Well, I can't see any grounds for an appeal which doesn't invoke my case.
Yeah, it's so weird how that works. It's precedent.
Important. Important to people of every faith that they don't get sent to something that isn't their faith, or even something that is their faith. And typically in Britain, because we've been around so long, I guess, we just bumble along a little bit and we don't get excited about things. We're very unrevolutionary people. So I guess most people just don't think it relates, don't think it's important. And I guess only when we talk about it for 40 odd minutes, you know, out from this emerges how important this can be to everyone, religious or not. And like I say, if we, particularly me, since I'm kind of at the center of it, even though it's not really about me, it's about everyone. If we don't do something about it, then can't expect anybody else to.
I need to ask you something that I should have asked a while ago. What is your planned course of action now? I mean, are you indeed going to have to take your kids to mass? I can't believe I didn't even ask that. What is the plan?
A plan has been put forward, not by me, which is that the best way to test this law is to defy it. And say, right, in the prosecution of me, the situation will be resolved. It's fine, apart from a 2-year prison sentence, seems quite a big stake for me to put up.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that the issue is bigger than me, and maybe a good martyr would put themselves in prison for 2 years happily. I don't do that happily.
Is it really a 2-year prison sentence?
Oh, well, no, it's up to. No, they're not. They're never going to do that to me. I don't see how they'd ever do that. Yeah. They might do. It's up to 2 years.
For what? But just not following orders?
Contempt of court. of court.
Oh, okay.
Not following orders would be contempt of court.
Yeah.
Just like giving out my name would be contempt of court.
Mm-hmm.
It's
going to be a real joke on everybody when it turns out your name actually is Anonymous Steve. Like, that's your full name.
Yeah. I might change
like,
it.
Gotcha.
About it.
Gotcha, everyone.
I had you all along.
Yeah.
So what do we do now? We try and draw it to public attention. We nag the Minister of Justice.
Well, yeah, but in the meantime, you're what? I mean, what are you personally doing? What's personally your plan?
Okay. Well, of course, the judge didn't give me the boys at weekends when there was mass, but it didn't say if you have them at weekends, you must take them to mass, because he assumed I wouldn't have them at weekends.
Oh, okay.
But my former wife has been more conducive than the judge. I now do have the boys every other weekend.
Oh, that's good.
We don't go to church. And I think they'd have a hard job claiming that was a breach because it wasn't specified. If you like, me having them at weekends is the breach, and that's not a breach they can address because there was scope within the judgment for us to make individual arrangements.
Well, then you're fine.
Apart from Christmas.
It sounds like you're okay. Oh, apart from Christmas.
As for Christmas. Well, I'm going to resist saying very clearly one thing or the other. What I'm going to say is that if the state and the courts aren't going to give my children freedom of thought, I will. Hmm. And my oldest is old enough to express himself clearly about what he believes, which is that there isn't a God. And I'm not going to impose something on him which he doesn't want to go to and doesn't believe in. And he's a very principled boy too. If he were to turn to me and say he was now a Muslim, I would do what he wanted me to do so he could practice his faith. And come to that, if he were to say to me, you know, I've rethought this, I am a proper Catholic now, I would, you know, again, not necessarily particularly happily, but what's that got to do with it?
Yeah.
I would respect his belief and do my best to allow him to follow his belief.
Sure.
And if that was every week, would go every week.
It'll be interesting when he comes out as a Muslim, which he's definitely going to. And then you're like, sorry, you have to go to Catholic Church. It's unfortunate.
It's difficult with an atheist for me to say this, but there is part of me that would really like him to be a Muslim.
just to shove it in this judge's face.
Well, there's a big, or maybe Jewish, there's a big lobby there I could use.
Yeah, yeah, true. Well, yeah, he needs to be savvy with who he picks, with who he goes with.
Have him be pick a political religious decision.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the best lobby. But yeah. then I'd have a whole new agency of people who would be backing him and his rights, and probably a much louder voice.
Yeah, it's unfortunate though it was Catholic, because Catholic would have been a good lobby to have. I mean, there's... What's that one guy who I always forget his name, but there's some very loud Catholic voices that make, and there's quite a few Catholics in the world, so it's a shame it wasn't the other way around. But oh well, you'll have to tell your son to pick the next best kind of lobby.
Yeah, there's something we can do in the meantime. There is a change.org petition.
Okay.
If I send you the link to that,
yeah, I'll put it in.
I certainly will. But to keep it really easy, if your listeners wanted to go to the Skeptical, which is just Skeptical Facebook page, the first item on the Facebook page is always the link to the petition. So rather than go to, you know, they can look at the show notes and get a direct link. But if you want to just go to Skeptical on Facebook, the link is there, follow the link and vote. And, you know, it's down to us. If we want, it doesn't matter where you're from, if anywhere in the world, we could have an influence to stop the state interfering with religion in any direction, preventing or demanding, then we have to stand up and place our vote out there and say, this is not acceptable. And when has the state ever casually given right to everybody? It doesn't, you have to demand it of the state. You know, I'm not saying that the individuals within the system are against democracy and freedom. I don't think anybody wants my situation. It's just that, you know, they've always got better things they can be doing with their time than sorting this out. And we have to make them care about this and tell them that there's a lot of people out here who are worried about the fact that you can have a judge dictating religious affiliation.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I think that's a... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I read you out the Article 9. It says very clearly... To paraphrase, freedom to manifest his religion or belief in worship, teaching, practice, and observance. Now, the manifestation is going to church. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, this is very clearly a breach of Article 9, the European Convention on Human Rights. We must make that, you know, I think that almost people don't care about the Convention on Human Rights. Well, we need to make people care about it and recognize that there are certain things which we don't care about because it doesn't matter to us. It, you know, I don't care about a fire in my house till a fire happens. And, you know, effectively in the legal system, a fire is happening. And if we don't put it out, it'll just carry on burning.
Yeah, people aren't accustomed. Well, people who, you know, we're talking about in citizens of,
in our world, your fine
country and mine, it's, we don't really face human rights violations every day. So it's not, I mean, we could see it in the news, but it's something. And it's not your most serious human rights violation. It's probably the one I would pick if I had to pick one to happen to me, but it's still,
this is true.
Still a big deal. It's still It's something that could be a lot worse if applied in a slightly different way. You know, the principle.
I'm not facing 50 lashes every so many weeks. Like, that's correct. But when your toaster catches fire in the kitchen, you don't sit around and go, "I'll wait till the kitchen's burning down." You stamp on it or stamp it out immediately or pull the plug out straight away. And, you know, I don't want to over-exaggerate.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm not trying to minimize it. I think it is a big deal. And I think that what you said was exactly right. I think that we need to do what we can. And I'm glad that the atheist community has really backed you up, and it seems to be a positive experience. I'm glad you didn't have to face any, you know, the horrendous things that sometimes social media popularity or attention can get you. So it seems like it's been pretty positive.
What could you say? I just don't know really what you could say.
I mean, there really isn't.
You and I are possibly uniquely talented to indulge in self-criticism and to find a complaint against ourselves. You know, this is what you do publicly and what I do privately.
Is that what my show is? I really need to reflect on some things here and figure some stuff out.
No, you don't. Not any more than you already do. You do plenty as you do.
This is too confusing.
You don't need therapy because you do it live.
Really? I think I do need therapy.
Well, no. How does that make you feel? No one needs to ask you that question, Thomas.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we know how it makes you feel. I'm teasing you, obviously. But I do like it. And like I say, obviously, there's too much of you on the internet already, but sometimes it is almost like you're my inner voice. Not quite, but almost, because I can hear myself thinking when I hear you talking sometimes, and it is quite funny.
Well, I really hope that if that's true, I need you to go ahead and be like a successful go-getter or something. I don't know. I need you to have a positive life and career and whatever so that, you know, it's not like, oh, yeah, Thomas is Steve's inner voice. Yeah, look at him. He's a mess.
I didn't say it was the good times when you were my inner voice. When you're quite isolated as well. What's interesting is that obviously you get an opinion about a faraway place based on the input you get, which is very interesting when we talk about maybe the Muslim world and what and I really know about it. But certainly, up to a few years ago, what the image of America was the America I heard and saw. And since I've become addicted to atheist and skeptic podcasts, the voice of America is fed through people like you and Tom and Cecil and Cecil and people, you know, that, and that's probably not very good, Tom and Cecil, but park them, the other atheist and skeptical podcasters, which are slightly more easy listening. You know, that's my voice of America in many ways and Australia. And
well, there you go. We're improving the image everywhere.
Just think of what a big part of that you are.
I mean, oh, I'm not a very big part of that. I'm a small part of that.
Well, yeah, okay, but it is.
But I hope to grow. I appreciate the compliment, and I hope that I hope we can reach more people, and more people can become clinically insane by having my voice in their head at all times.
The image we get of America in Europe, I mean, you probably slap your head as I say it. You probably dread what I'm going to say, but the image I get of Americans as this kind of group, like, you know, I mean, I can't help but. Nobody can help.
Go ahead. Let me have it. Okay.
No. If I say Muslim, you can't help. You've got an image in your head. It's not appropriate. It doesn't fit them all. But this is how people think. Okay. We cannot help the fact that we stereotype and generalize. It's not good, but we are human. But all I'm going to say is that the image I have of an American is not a reflexive person.
Okay.
So it's interesting. It's probably an abrasive, you know, you know what I mean? It was a saying during the war, which I was not alive during, by the way, during the Second World War, when the Americans were in England, which is overpaid, oversexed, and over here. And I suppose it's an abrasive, loud characteristic, not the thoughtful, considered, reflexive, maybe slightly embarrassed voice, a crazy voice.
All you have to do is look at the movies that come out of America and the movies that come out of the UK to see the difference. I think there's It's not just a stereotype. It's not just a false stereotype. I think there's
every stereotype
is true.
No, every stereotype lacks exceptions. Obviously, like yeah. all I'm saying is that you stand out, if you like, very much from the false image, the false stereotype I have of Americans, because you have this self doubt. And I think
that, all right. Well, my self doubt is telling me I think people have had enough of hearing about my characteristics. So I think I'm gonna have to cut you off. And simply say, I appreciate what I hope is a compliment.
it definitely is, Thomas. So I really enjoyed this interview.
I appreciate it, and I always love talking to
you. Read.
What's that?
That awful book you read.
Oh, but, well, that's...
I don't like that.
That's not even... Yeah, I don't even... That's why I need therapy, actually. That's part of it, just to get through the book, the Bible. All right.
I'm so looking forward to the New Testament. Okay, look, I can hear you trying to go, and
well,
you can hear
I was
going to
say,
on.
I mean, we're out of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to that not related to me that you'd like to add?
No, not you at all. But we should talk about your Patreons.
Oh well, if you're trying to give me an endorsement, I suppose I will begrudgingly say yes. Go ahead and. Plug.
I'll let you talk about them once you got rid of me.
This is a Tuesday show, and I'll thank my patrons on Thursday. But yes, feel free to support the show if you could. I really appreciate it. It means a lot. Patreon.com/atheist. You know, I grabbed that URL, so you know it's got to be important. Patreon.com/atheist.
And while you're there, go to Skeptical, listen to the most recent episode of Skeptical, and on the Facebook page, make sure you put your vote forward to make a difference.
Yes, the link will absolutely be in the show notes that likely people could be looking at right now. So I want to thank you for coming on again, Steve. You're always a pleasure to talk to. And you're always a lightning rod of bizarre stuff that happens to you. So
what could happen next?
Yeah, I know. I who knows? You could be there could be some sort of nuclear accident and you gain superpowers for all we know.
I know. Yeah, you could be. I'm going for really taken away by aliens.
Ooh, okay. Well, you'll really have to – can you check if the aliens have Skype, or maybe if they don't have Skype, we could get on Google Plus so we could do an interview about that. Whatever they have. I'm sure interface.
I live in the middle of nowhere. There's no one else around. There's no obvious witnesses. Obviously, I'm going to be kidnapped by aliens.
Right, and we're all going to believe you.
Absolutely.
You're a rare case where I might actually believe you if you said – No. All right, we got to wrap
it up.
It's
great fun, Thomas. It's always fun talking to you, mate.
Thanks, you too. I really appreciate you coming on. And best of luck with this bizarre going on. I hope there's some appeal or something that can happen.
I'll update you as things happen.
Great.